Now it's time for the Southern Cross.
Southern Cross is back, and with us in studio today is Pacific Media Watch contributing editor Michael Andrew. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, friend?
Good. You know, good. We were talking about the weather before. It's just tragic.
You can't dress for it.
Can't dress for it at all.
No, it's just a big mystery.
Yeah, complete mystery.
Certainly is. A lot of mysteries on at the moment.
Nice. Are there?
Well, you know.
On Netflix.
Anyway, are there mysteries in the Pacific?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a big enigma.
Yeah.
Is the Pacific. Sweet, go for it.
So let's start off with the Pacific Islands Forum that's being held this week.
Yeah, so that starts tomorrow, and it runs for 3 days from the 13th to the 16th. It's been held in Tuvalu this year, which is quite a poignant reminder, because Tuvalu is one of the countries that are worst affected by rising sea levels due to climate change. So I think it was deliberately held there against the backdrop of literally water lapping at the villages. And this year's summit forum will prioritize climate change at the top of the agenda. And this is reportedly against a bit of a push to include China's influence in the Pacific as the front runner on the agenda, but the Pacific Islands leaders were quite adamant in their assertion that climate change needs to be the priority, and it shouldn't be eclipsed by geopolitical issues such as China's growing influence. And that's obviously Australia's mandate. They want to discuss China.
Well, is there, I suppose we're quite involved, and Australia is quite involved in this Pacific Forum.
Yes, yeah.
How much do we get to set the agenda, and how much do the Pacific, small Pacific nations kind of get to do it?
Well, it should very much be a consensus, because it acts like the Pacific Island Forum is like the Pacific version of the United Nations.
Right.
I think it's roughly around 20 countries, maybe 18. I'll have to double check that. But Australia and New Zealand are certainly the biggest. But Fiji has been having a growing influence and over the other countries. And they've basically, Fiji have said in the past, under Vivek Bainimarama, the Prime Minister, that Australia and New Zealand shouldn't really be included in it, because they don't have the Pacific's best interests at heart.
Mm.
Australia obviously is still pushing intensely on a coal-based industry and economy, and that is a total insult for the Pacific Island leaders, who are trying their best to mitigate climate change, and they're very, very much at the vanguard of climate change effects. Their countries are
going underwater.
Yeah, so they're kind of like, well, if you're gonna have this domestic coal policy, then it's not really in our interest. You're kind of compromising your own integrity in this whole thing. So climate change will be, it's been set that it will be at the top of the agenda, but interestingly enough, West Papua is also going to be up there as well. And this is unprecedented, because it's never really been this unanimous decision before to include West Papua. It's always been kind of kept in the shadows, and no one really wants to discuss it, except for Vanuatu. Vanuatu has always been the staunch supporter. So at a preliminary meeting of the Pacific Islands Forum, Vanuatu apparently really debated to include West Papua, and no other country voted it down except for, guess who?
Indonesia.
No. Indonesia not in there. Australia.
Australia. Oh.
Australia, yeah. So voted it down because Indonesia is a key ally.
Yeah.
So they obviously, all that nasty political business. But so Australia eventually backed down. The other countries said, yep, we're going to factor in West Papua. We're going to try and hold Indonesia accountable for their invitation to the United Nations to come visit West Papua, which is an open invitation, but everyone's a bit skeptical if that's going to be followed through. So there's a deadline that they're going to follow up and keep putting pressure to make this happen. But very, very good signals for that unanimous support for West Papua, which, as I said, is unprecedented, but it's exactly what the situation needs and calls for, a bit of a united front. So that will be on in the next few days, and I'm sure the reports will be coming in from us and other media outlets that are covering the Pacific, but watch the space.
So let's move on to the Philippines. There's been another journalist issue there.
Yeah. So this poor dude was shot in a remote region of the Philippines called Ifugao, and it's still the reports are still coming in on what exactly happened, but allegedly he's been covering environmental issues. Another case of a journalist kind of getting involved in environmental issues where indigenous populations are being attacked by forestry, and their lands are being attacked and logged and whatnot. So he's been covering this, and it was reported that the military was following him, and there had been some social media verbal attacks against him. So the suspicion is that the military are involved, but as I said, the reports are still coming in, and it's still yet to be investigated.
Something's fishy.
Definitely fishy, because yeah, he was on the kind of hit list, as it were. He's in critical condition, so he got shot, like he got really messed up in the neck and stuff. But the local police have said they're going to be launching an investigation task group to look into it, but it's just another sign, another one of these attacks on journalists that are growing and growing, and it's just an escalation. Sad, yeah. What's already happening. Poor dude, I hope he's okay, and yeah. We'll see what comes of the investigation, but definitely something untoward, and it doesn't seem from the reports at this stage like it was an accident or it was civilian shooting or something like that. Definitely a targeted attempt on his life,
which is just so scary, like working as a journalist in those areas and knowing that that is quite a serious reality. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, which is terrifying.
And it sounded like he was doing good work.
Yeah, just
like
really doing your job.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a report that he was also involved in activism, and that might have made him, definitely have made him stand out with the authorities, because the more active you are and the more presence you have, of course, the more you're going to piss off the establishment. But, yeah, that's that one.
Yeah, still not great. A little bit more about Ihumatao. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I did a story about the different cultural and community groups that are backing the occupation and also are getting involved in Tikanga Māori. And one, obviously, it's quite a multicultural affair at Ihumatao. I mean, there's so much Pacific presence. There's obviously Samoan presence there. There's a Tongan presence. There's Hawaiian presence, because they have their own similar protests. So it's very much a kind of Pacifica indigenous issue that has attached itself to this movement. It represents a lot of what's happening right now, encroachment on indigenous land. But also there's groups that are supporting as well, such as the Asian supporting Tino Rangatira. This is always a mouthful. Asian supporting Tino Rangatiratanga. And they have been one of the biggest presence down there. And outside of the protests, they organise treaty workshops, Treaty of Waitangi workshops, where they can teach other Asian migrants about treaty issues and about the colonial injustices that happened towards Māori. So it's a really powerful message that they're sending out there, and they had some great things to say about the the experience of coming here as an Asian migrant and having the Māori world fed to you through a Pākehā narrative, and getting this distorted idea about
what it is.
A total misrepresentation.
Completely.
And there was this great quote that one of the members had, that she said that when, you know, the Pākehā establishment have control of these relationships, they pit migrants against Māori, and that division often works in their favour to maintain the colonial status quo. So I thought it was a real powerful message, and I've talked to other migrant friends who say, yeah, we totally get this idea when we come here that, we should be separated. But these people want to form their own relationships, which is fantastic. They want to build their own relationships. They're getting very involved in the cultural aspects of Māori, learning te reo and whatnot. So a really good organization there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Amazing.
And also, I'll just say, in line with what your interview before, I interviewed this other woman who's a Muslim human rights lawyer, and she's based in Hamilton, and she's getting involved in Maori affairs because she represents asylum seekers, and she said that when they turn up at the border here in New Zealand, they get sent straight to Mount Eden prison, where their first exposure to Maori is through the criminal system because there's a disproportionate number of Maori. Mm. So they form this negative perception, asylum seekers, based on their first experience in New Zealand. And then they go, Maori are criminals. But no, it's just because you got put into this place where it's a total misrepresentation.
And you're not taught taught about anything to do with prisons, I'm sure, when you're there either. So you're just sort of seeing it as it looks, which is not the way it really should be represented. It's horrible.
So this woman, she gets these asylum seekers, and she says, no, it's actually not like that. This is just the system is calibrated to actually be very punitive against New Zealand's indigenous population because of a long-standing colonial effects. Mm. And it's not actually like that. And she gets them more involved and the beautiful cultural aspects of Tikanga Māori. So she's doing great work, and she's one of the ardent and very present supporters at the Ihu Mātou protest as well.
That's incredible. It's amazing, hearing so many stories from Ihu Mātou about amazing people doing
it's really very just cool things. I think it's galvanizing that support and that awareness about the plight of the attack on indigenous land and the effects of colonialism.
Absolutely. Hmm. Well, let's go back to Australia, where you could talk a little bit more about the ABC raid on journalists there, because we've been hearing about that over the last couple of weeks and the outcome of that.
We never have any good news coming about Australia.
I know. It's a really shame, negative. Right? I've got an agenda. So I'll just touch on this. So one of the senators in Australia, they've got a version of the Official Information Act called the Freedom of Information, where you can request information from the government, and the government released these papers that basically detailed that there was another agency involved in those raids, and they are most likely the Australian Signals Directorate, and that's particularly concerning because their job is to monitor the communications of, you know, wanted people outside of Australia. But the story that prompted the raids was they're trying to expand that to be Australians being monitored, so internal domestic surveillance. So this is all quite fishy because the story comes out, okay, this is what the Australian Signals Directorate is doing. It's trying to monitor Australians. Then the raids happen, and then they get this document that says that the Australian Signals Director was most likely involved. So it's all interrelated around that story, and it's just basically trying to crack down on good journalism, as we've discussed before, because Australians should know if they're being monitored. That's in the public interest.
Completely.
There's no excuse for trying to keep that secret.
Has this caused a bit of an uproar?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just prompted more questions. It's good that the senators got involved, because it's not just the media companies who are pushing for answers and are trying to hold the government accountable, but it's actually public figures and politicians that are taking the sides of the journalists, and that's democracy at work. So there's a countermeasure against these undemocratic practices on behalf of the Australian Federal Police. But sure to develop in the coming weeks.
I just can't believe Australia.
Well, that sort of makes you wonder if it's happening there.
Yeah.
You never know.
No. Well, I mean, we've had scandals like that before with Nikki Haga and Dirty Politics.
Yeah,
but,
true.
You know, we know New Zealand didn't really care about that, did we?
That's scary stuff. It's really scary stuff.
Actually. It is scary.
It is scary.
So, and then finally, we're going on to Hiroshima and sort of remembrance event in Auckland. Can you talk about that?
Yes. This is a different theme altogether.
Yes.
But every year there is a commemoration of the awful loss of life at Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945, the bombing of Japan by the Americans. And this is held to basically remember those people, but also to scrutinize the the very widely touted excuse that America used for dropping those bombs and killing 200,000 people in, you know, a matter of days, and then a subsequent another 100,000 from nuclear radiation poisoning and all that. So it was held last night at the Alan Melville Center down in the CBD there in Auckland CBD, but it was a very poignant and profound basically gathering with lots of speeches, lots of talks about people that were directly affected or whose ancestors and descendants were directly affected. And it's just a pledge that we can't take the focus from off nuclear development, because New Zealand's always been ardently opposed to that. It's easily overshadowed, especially there are murmurings against the backdrop of climate change that we need a better energy source, and nuclear is starting to become more of a tangible and practical issue for a lot of people who are saying, well, you know, it's very efficient, but it's still incredibly unstable. And what these folks were saying is that we can't really forget our legacy of protesting against this, and also putting a lot of emphasis on the power of protest. There were a lot of links to the protest down at Ihumātau, and talking about the need for youth and New Zealanders to always be challenging the status quo, always be asking questions, and always be trying to hold the government accountable and exercising our right to protest, which is you know, our New Zealand's bedrock of democratic process was this nuclear movement, and then subsequently the anti-apartheid movement. So there was a lot of emphasis on reinvigorating our right to protest and getting youth involved along with this theme. So it was a very powerful gathering.
I hadn't even thought about that, but that is about nuclear power and climate change and that being a viable option for some countries. Yeah. That's really scary.
It's easy to get seduced by the efficiency argument that, wow, we could generate so much
power. So much power, but it's so dangerous.
We have amazing wind resources. Yeah. Why would we consider that?
But yeah.
It's also quite interesting, the whole change in the narrative about, I guess a lot of people would say, I would not, but a lot of people say that it was necessary that they dropped a nuclear bomb, to bring about the end of the war sooner, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But you don't really see that being challenged that much, but it's quite interesting that...
Yeah. Well, there was,
it should be.
If I may, there was a fellow there, and I don't know, I haven't done the research myself, but he's just done a PhD, I think he's done a history PhD, but this topic in particular he's looked into, and he's dug up evidence that suggests that the Americans wanted to develop the bomb as so fast before, because Japanese were actually going to surrender anyway, but they wanted to actually test the effectiveness of the bomb.
Oh, that's awful.
Before Japan surrendered. So they brought over nuclear physicists to help develop it as fast as they could, because they had already cracked the code that Japan was going to surrender. That's what he said.
That's what he
said. Quote me on that.
This is
a theory.
I'm sure, definitely was not clear cut.
Yeah. But, I wouldn't put it past.
No.
Regimes,
a lot of people wouldn't be surprised.
Kind of thing off, anyway.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. Read all about Pacific Media Centre updates at asiapacificreport.nz.
That was the Southern Cross.